हरे कृष्ण।
और माय डियर फ्रेंड वाज स्पीकिंग सम काइंड वर्ड्स फॉर मी, आई जस्ट हैड इमोशनल एक्सपीरियंस दैट इन अ फैमिली एज वी आर नाउ सिचुएटेड, अ नाइस लविंग फैमिली ऑफ दोज हु आर कंसिडरिंग इन द लाइव्स द गोल ऑफ लाइफ इज टू प्लीज राधा एंड गोपीनाथ, राधा गोपीनाथ भक्त समाज। इन अ फैमिली समटाइम्स समबडी विल, अ ब्रदर, अ लविंग ब्रदर, अ लविंग फ्रेंड विल समटाइम्स यू नो जस्ट टू एनकरेज समबडी स्पीक सम नाइस काइंड वर्ड्स। सो द मिस्ट ऑफ फैमिली मेंबर्स, आई वार्मली एक्सेप्ट योर ग्रीटिंग्स ऑफ काइंडनेस एंड वर्ड्स ऑफ एप्रिसिएशन। सो टू ऑल द वंडरफुल मेंबर्स ऑफ दिस इलस्ट्रियस फैमिली ऑफ डिवोटीज, we welcome all of you today to our Sunday love feast, and I'd like to speak on a subject which is of much importance to all of us as followers of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. If you read the Vaishnava calendar, day after tomorrow, Tuesday, is a very historic day for ISKCON. It is the actual birthday of ISKCON. It is a day when Srila Prabhupada officially incorporated and registered the International Society for Krishna Consciousness as a registered society in the United States of America. And that way, gave it a very strong seed of foundation to a movement which is destined, prophesized to spread all over the world, to every town, village and street. So Srila Prabhupada's illustrious life, this great empowered acharya, is an ocean of inspiration. And much of Prabhupada's life is known, especially what he did after reaching America, 1965. But today we would like to delve upon those very important events, historically extremely important events which took place, which went about to shape the destiny of the entire planet in this dark age of Kali. We know that this age is very blessed because it is the chosen age where Sri Krishna comes in his extraordinarily merciful form as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he ushers an era of ever-increasing bliss, offering everybody in this world an opportunity to experience the highest joys of the spiritual sky. An opportunity which was not offered to any jivatma in this world for billions of years. A very rare gift. Anarpita charim chirat karuna avtirna kalau samarpitam unnata ujwala rasa. A type of mellow, a type of rasa, which is anarpita, never offered to anybody for millions and millions of years. Why? Because this form of Krishna as Mahaprabhu actually comes only one day in a day of Brahma. One day of Brahma is 4.3 billions of years. It's a very long time. So 1486, that historic year, is the year when actually this golden avatar puts his lotus feet on the holy land of Sridham Mayapur. And that year is considered the actual beginning of a new era in Kali. the beginning of the golden era, being ushered by the golden avatar. To start a movement which will envelop the entire globe eventually. So the Lord Himself comes along with His associates, Sangha Pangastra Parshadam. He is accompanied by especially the six Goswamis who lay the very foundation of a huge building which will grow for 10,000 years. A building, as you know, needs a very strong, powerful foundation. Prabhupada always told us that books are the basis. Our movement is so solidly based on the authority. It is not a whimsical movement started by some new fashionable guru who creates a fad of people following some sort of semi-spiritual or para-spiritual metaphysical type of process. Not a wishy-washy thing, but actually a very solid, grounded movement with immaculate philosophy that had to be established. Books had to be the basis. So the six Goswamis engage in writing of literatures. After that has been done, the books are not just for meant for putting in the godown. They have to be preached. So we see actually historically that the three first primary preachers and book distributors of our movement were the disciples of Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami is that illustrious, most powerful philosopher, Prabhupada says, who ever lived in this world. He composed 400,000 verses. Extraordinary. He had three Siksha disciples, Shyamanand Pandit, who preached in the entire realm of Orissa, Narottamdas Thakur, who preached in the entire realm of Manipur, and Srinivas Acharya, who preached in Bengal. And he had such a powerful impact on all these three places. They converted the king, Raja Birambir, to a devotee. And Van Vishnupur becomes the first Krishna conscious state in the history of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, followed by Manipur. There is an immediate upsurge of bhakti in India. But the clouds of Kali Yuga are mounting and pouring ignorance from all sides. And for about 250 years, nothing really is happening. In fact, whatever is already established is destroyed by Muslims who are many times born with a lot of hatred towards Vaishnavas, Hindus. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Baldev Vidyabhushan again bring about an upsurge of bhakti in Vrindavan. Vrindavan's Radha Govind ji Mandir is already destroyed. But again, something starts off nicely. But the main impetus to the preaching comes from the three pioneers of the modern era. Thakur Bhakti Vinod, Bhakti Sansari Thakur, and His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. They are those is like a trio. A compact trio of eternal associates of Radha and Krishna who had a combined mission to really flood the world with the mercy of the golden avatar. Bhakti Sansari Thakur especially can be considered the most fierce preacher the world has seen. He began his career of preaching in 1918. And he was different from all of the previous acharyas. We see the acharyas actually bring about an evolution of spiritual culture. It's not a stereotype type of whatever they did, we follow. They create an evolution. So Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur for the first time smashed the idea that Krishna consciousness is only for the Brahmanical caste. Prabhupada in his own words says the contribution of my Guru Maharaj was that he was against casteism, caste Goswamis. And so much of printing of books, printing presses, the most intelligent people in society who never became interested in Krishna consciousness so far were surrendering to Bhakti Siddhanta. The most intelligent brass, intellectuals, were becoming his disciples, sannyas disciples. As this is going on, come in the scene, 1922, that historic year when this young man, Abhay Charan, meets his eternal Guru Maharaj for the first time at Ultranaga Junction Road. And there the seed of a world mission is planted in the heart of Abhay Charan. As he is bowing down to his Guru Maharaj, he says, "You are a young, intelligent man, and you should preach the cult of Krishna consciousness in the English-speaking world." The purpose of which Mahaprabhu Chaitanya had come is again spoken, almost mystically, to a person whom he is seeing for the very first time in his life. Without even being introduced to him, he gives him a mandate, a command, a mission, that you should preach all over the world. Those are not ordinary words for Abhay Charan. That one line is going to shape the entire life of this great personality. This one line became his lifeline. And everything Abhay Charan did after 1922 till 1977 was fulfillment of that one mandate. Very powerful, soul-penetrating words of Bhaktisiddhanta. Prabhupada Satrayam Abhay Charan is still a family man. He's a pharmacist. And it's predicted actually by some astrologer that he is going to become the richest man in the world, in the country. That was his potential. And of course he did become. So he had a flourishing pharmacy, and in 1923, the very next year after Prabhupada met Bhaktisiddhanta, he relocates himself to Allahabad and starts a pharmacy called Prayag Pharmacy. Very successful business. And Jawaharlal Nehru would come to take medicines from his pharmacy. Very nice. Dr. Bose was his business partner. Things are going very well. But then somehow the business starts dwindling. Abhay Charan Prabhupada has given a lot of stock of medicines to people all over the North India, but they do not get payment in return. Payments are getting delayed. And within 4 years of business, he has 10,000 rupees of debt. 10,000 rupees in 1928. Maybe Anandam Prabhu can tell us what is the meaning of that in that era. Maybe 10 crore rupees or something like that. A huge amount of money, debt. No payments, no bills coming back. So Dr. Bose says, "I will now have to buy your entire Prayag Pharmacy because you cannot liquidate your debt." So Abhay Charan Prabhupada is left with no business. He's on the roads. But he had potential, he had skill, he had knowledge, he had power in his muscles. He's a confident man, young man. He moves off, and he came actually to Bombay. Because Bombay was still at the time also a very important place for business. And guess where he started his business? At Grant Road. And Prabhupada had a shop right here at Grant Road, near Nana Chowk. But before that, before coming to Bombay, a very important event took place in Prabhupada's life. It was 1932, and Bhakti Sansari Thakur had gone for a huge parikrama of Vrindavan, Braj Mandal parikrama. And the mood of Bhakti Siddhanta is seen in an ad given in one of the Gaudiya papers. He said that we invite people from all persons of all nationalities, irrespective of caste, creed, color, age and sex, to join in the Braj Mandal Parikrama, commemorating the Parikrama performed by Lord Chaitanya in the year 1514 AD. So it was commemorating Mahaprabhu's own travelling to all 12 forests of Vrindavan, Dvadash Kanana, and Bhaktisiddhanta was again reunited in the same pastimes, but not alone, with thousands of followers. We can judge the fact that he must have been a very fierce preacher, uncompromising. Lion Guru he was called, Simha Guru. He was so uncompromising and direct. Prabhupada said he used the chopping technique for preaching. The various techniques, you know. Everything is technique. It's chopping technique. Sadhu cuts. Like a surgeon. So he would preach so vehemently against casteism. He strongly preached. Kiba vipra kiba nyasi, shudra kene noi. Shri Krishna Teta Vyata Sai Guru Hoy. That anybody who's maybe is a Shudra or Sannyasi, Mlecha, Yavana, whatever he is, if he knows Krishna Tattva, the science of Krishna, he is glorified as Guru, as a Brahman, as a Goswami. So he cut against the established understanding of what actually it means to be a devotee. And that aroused such vehement, antagonistic response from the caste conscious Brahmanas that people in Vrindavan wanted to kill this Acharya. And how much they gave for, they gave a bribe to an inspector. You know how much bribe they gave at that time? 25,000 rupees. How much is that money? But that only goes to show what a major threat he was. That they did not mind collecting that, and they actually brought the money to the inspector. Kill him. We will kill him and you don't catch us. The inspector said, sorry, I accept bribes, no doubt. But not for having a sadhu killed. That's not within my... So he went to Bhaktisiddhanta and said, people are trying to kill you, be careful. But this fierce, uncompromising preaching style of Bhaktisiddhanta, which is his hallmark, like a trademark of his very personality, was fully absorbed by his disciples, especially Abhaycharana Aravinda. So in October 32, this parikrama took place, and 1 month later, he was supposed to come to Allahabad for the inauguration of the Gaudiya Math. On 21st November 1932, historic day for all of us, is Prabhupada's Diksha Day. And he became from Abhay Charan into Abhay Charanaravind Das. Generally, Saraswati Thakur gives Diksha one at a time, first Harinam and then second. But he sees him so qualified, he said, first and second at one time. He is now a qualified Brahmin initiated personality. And then, as I said, in 34, Prabhupada came to Bombay. And when he comes to Bombay, again, Krishna is always, you know, making nice arrangements for him. Saraswati Thakur's two disciples, Bhakti Saranga Maharaj, Bhakti and Sridhar Swami Maharaj, Sridhar Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Maharaj and Bhakti Saranga Maharaj, these two very principal disciples, they come to Bombay to start a branch of Gaudiya Math on behalf of their Guru Maharaj. And they meet Abhaycharan Aravinda now and ask for help because they are new to the city. And Prabhupada by now had already so much contacts and doctors and this and that. He helps. And the temple is built right here at Nana Chowk. It is not there anymore. A few years back it shifted. But Prabhupada is instrumental in establishing the temple of Gaudiya Math. In fact, even donated a deity of Gauranga Mahaprabhu over there. I think the names are Shri Shri Radha Vai Bhavananda. That was their name. Years ago I had visited the temple when it was still there. So this place of Grand Road is very much having the dust of his divine grace all around. We are in a fortunate place of Bombay because Prabhupada breathed here, walked here, thought here, preached here. we feel sacred. However, Krishna is behind Prabhupada's life and he is giving him various signals at various times. After only 4 years of having a business year, again it breaks down. In 38, he cannot stay anymore. He goes back and now he starts again vigorously in Lucknow. Prabhupada had a very undaunting spirit. That is something which you have to... Why I am saying this is to make us understand that Prabhupada was a very undaunted person. Nothing in Prabhupada's life, if you read his biography, there's so many reversals. But he was never frustrated. Like, you know how we say, today's line, it's frustrating. We get frustrated for small things. If you miss the train, which you're supposed to catch to, you know, to your office, it's frustrating. So, Prabhupada was, you know, losing business. Things are happening in his life, going up, soaring down. And in Lucknow, now he makes a bigger attempt. See, Prabhupada was always big. He was always doing big things. You know, small business, you know, it's a few thousand. Now he invests in his business 40,000 rupees to start a Lucknow business. And his immediate success. He was competing with Bengal Chemicals, which was the biggest pharmacy at that time. Very successful. But again, Prabhupada had his repeated experiences of his life where just things went up and down so much. When I was in Bombay, it was Bhakti Sanskriti Thakur's Vyas Puja celebrations year. And Prabhupada writes a poem and he writes and gives a speech. And the Saraswati Thakur's 62nd appearance day in this world. And the 8 stanzas which Prabhupada wrote, he writes one very illustrious stanza, which is very, again, a stanza which will shape Prabhupada's life. Huh? What is that? Absolute is sentient, thou hast proved. Impersonal calamity, thou hast removed. This went to Bhakti Sanskriti Thakur. When he read that, he was so very happy. Yasya prasadad, bhagavat prasado. When Guru Maharaj is pleased, Krishna is pleased. Disciples, confidential disciples of Sanskriti Thakur said, this verse is of as much importance as is the verse written by Rupa Goswami for glorifying Lord Chaitanya. Only person who has very deep understanding of the mission and who has touched the very heart of his Guru Maharaj can pick out the essence of his preaching. This was that one line that the Vaishnava culture, especially headed by Bhaktisiddhanta, is here to demolish the edifice of impersonalistic way of understanding of God. That God is not impersonal, nirakara, nirguna, but he is a divine person, the supreme personality. That word personality is important. Supreme personality. He is a person, divine person with a eternal Sachit Ananda form. So as soon as he reads that, Bhakti Sanskriti Thakur said, whatever he writes, publish it. So that is another important event, because from then onwards, whatever Prabhupada wrote actually was published. And Prabhupada wrote a lot. What we see here on the book of on Prabhupada Simhasan is just a small fragment of his writings. He wrote hundreds of articles, thousands of letters. This is even before he went to America. There's a whole library of things he wrote actually. He was a prolific writer. Truly. Just like his predecessor Acharya, Bhakti Vinod Thakur and others, writing so much. Anyway, in 1939, he wrote the Introduction to Gita Upanishad, one of his first books. Then, as I said, he went to Lucknow and then the business collapsed again. And now as these things are happening in Prabhupada's life, he's starting somewhere, it goes on well, it collapses. By now Prabhupada has had two very powerful experiences in his night sleep. Twice, Bhakti Sanskrit Thakur comes to him in a dream and says, Abhaychanarvinda, take sannyas. Leave the world and join the mission full time. Prabhupada is always shaken up from these dreams when he gets up. It's a horrifying dream. Because he knows these are not ordinary dreams like we dream. We just, you know how we dream. And what we dream. It's shameful to even think that such horrifying dreams come to our consciousness because of our past life experiences and unfulfilled desires and all sorts of such impressions in our subconscious mind for millions of years. But Prabhupada, these great souls, acharyas, they don't get dreams just like the way we get dreams. Krishna speaks to them in their dreams. But Prabhupada is so much nervous about these dreams. How can I give up family life? I have a responsibility. I cannot give it up. But through all this time, the burning desire to preach is mounting in his heart. He has not forgotten what he had heard in 1922. I have to preach, I have to preach. Starts writing Gita Upanishad. But again, Lucknow business failed, everything failed. And then, Prabhupada is now in 1937, something very important took place. Very historical event. Again, as I said, these are all various events of Prabhupada's life which are going to shape his life into what he really became afterwards. In December of 1936, Prabhupada wrote a letter to his Guru Maharaj. So, my dear Guru Maharaj, you have so many disciples, sannyas disciples, and all of them have so much immense help to you. They are serving you in such wonderful ways, offering direct service. Please, dear Guru Maharaj, please instruct me, how can I as a grihastha serve you? Very instructive letter, because this informs us, preaches to us, trains us in the fact that the only relevant question one can ask the spiritual master is this. The spiritual master, of course, asks for questions, and we ask so many questions, sometimes philosophical doubts, etc., or personal problems. But the actual relevant question to us, of a disciple to his superior Guru Maharaj, is, my dear Guru Maharaj, please inform me how I can serve you. There is no more important question than this. And when the humble spirit of service is there, then the spiritual master instructs you. When he sees a receptive heart, a receptive receptacle, then he infuses his instructions in the fertile soil of your heart. But the seed of instruction can grow into a tree. And Prabhupada had that very, very fertile heart. He was asking very genuinely and humbly, Guru Maharaj, please tell me. Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur is right now in the last days of his life, his mortal world. And Sarvajit Thakur responds back. And what he responds back is very important for us to remember. Of course, in his last days, like Prabhupada, he was always preaching. These preachers they have an insatiable desire to preach and talk about Krishna. So he was instructing his disciples that they must remain united, never quarrel together, and preach the message of Rup and Raghunath, because we are all the insignificant servants of Rup and Raghunath Das Goswami. And then he writes, 15 days later, a reply comes from Sarvajit Thakur. Please hear carefully, because this is Prabhupada's last push from his Guru Maharaj towards a world mission. I have every hope that you can turn yourself into a very good English preacher if you serve the mission to inculcate the novel impression of Lord Chaitanya's teachings to the people in general, as well as to philosophers and religionists. These are the last words of Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur communicated to Srila Prabhupada. And obviously we see a strong connection between what he spoke in 1922 and in December 1936. That he must, again, those dreams were there, the instruction of 22 was there, his letter was there. Prabhupada was being pushed towards a world mission. So this became a very important letter in Prabhupada's life. Because it's the departing instructions of the spiritual master. We can imagine when the Guru Maharaj is going away and he tells you something, my dear disciple, so and so Krishna Das, please do this. We can imagine that's something which you can never imagine to not do it. We would give our life to do that, because it is like a father. You know, when father dies, you said, what is your last, like Gaur Mohan Dey, for example, when Gaur Mohan Dey left his body, Prabhupada's dear father, who shaped his life as a child, as a Vaishnava. In 1930, when he was leaving his body, Prabhupada was that time in, you know, elsewhere doing his business. And as soon as he came to know that his father is old and sickly, he went to his home, knocked at a door and came to his father and said, saw his father was very sick. He called the doctor. The doctor said, I don't know how this person is living still. He has no pulse in his body. Prabhupada knew things are very bad. He went to his guru, his father, Gaur Mohan Dey, and said, Father, tell me, what can I do for you? What is your last desire? He said, we have a cow. Give that cow to the Allahabad Gaudiya Mutt. Immediately done. He came back, Prabhupada, and said, Father, do you have any other desire? He said, call all the Vaishnavas of Allahabad Gaudiya Mutt to our home and feed them nice prasad and have kirtan in the house. Immediately arranged. On that very day, all disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta, brahmacharis, all came. Atulananda Brahmachari was the president. They all came to his house, had nice kirtan. Satisfied Gaur Mohan Dey's soul. That night, he left for the spiritual sky. So obviously when a father, especially the spiritual father, the spiritual master, gives an instruction when he is leaving his body, it's very important for the disciple. And not only for the last, but over he speaks when he's alive also. When he's alive also, he speaks so many important things. So now Bhaktisiddhanta was giving the last push. Go out and preach. And just 1 year before also, in 1935, another event took place, which was very important. These are, you know, some of the jewels of Prabhupada's life. The precious jewels, the events. His life is full of variegated jewels. Events which shaped and molded his consciousness. When Prabhupada was walking with his Guru Maharaj at Radha Kund, even now there is a place at Radha Kund where Bhakti Vinod Thakur, which Bhaktivinoda Thakur had constructed, where Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur would live. And they're walking together on the bank of Radha Kund. It's a very nice atmosphere, but Bhaktisiddhanta is very disturbed. He's very disturbed, so disturbed in his heart. He built a nice temple at Bagh Bazar, Calcutta, with so much of effort in 1930. And now the disciples are fighting for the property, fighting for rooms and facilities. He is very upset. He said, there will be fire in the mutt and everything will collapse. So the disturbed Saraswati Thakur Acharya speaks his heart to Prabhupada. He said, Abhay Charan, if you ever get money in your life, you print books. Oh, again, a line which shot from Saraswati Thakur's lotus-like mouth and entered into Prabhupada's heart and stayed there. If you ever get money, print books. Again, a mandate. And then, in 37, Prabhupada, his Guru Maharaj left. Lucknow business collapsed. And by now, things are really happening at home also. At home, Prabhupada is getting more and more and more disinterested in family life. Why? Because his sons, and especially his wife, is absolutely non-supportive to his Krishna-conscious missionary activities. they are devotees, but they are traditional type of devotees who believe in deity worship, some this and that, who are willing to just remain on the pious platform of devotional life. But Prabhupada was not satisfied with piety, which is just sattva-guni. He was transcendental. He wanted a life of dynamic surrender to Radha and Krishna. So that oftentimes he and his wife have difficulties, and if he gets more and more disinterested. And as Prabhupada's business is collapsing, the family is in fact even more and more disturbed that this man is not supporting us but only going out and preaching. So they become more and more upset that he is neglecting his family duties. At that time, Prabhupada is reading Srimad Bhagavatam. And he reads a verse from the 10th canto, 80th verse, 80th chapter of the 10th canto. He said, Yasyaham anugranami harishyata dhanam shanai. That verse is spoken. It's a very, very important verse. In this verse, Krishna says that when I show my devotee special mercy, there is two types of mercy, mercy and special mercy. We may be just getting mercy, but Prabhupada got special mercy. And what is that special mercy? He said, when I get special mercy, then I take harishye tad dhanam. Very difficult type of mercy to digest. to lose all the money you have. And money is earned out of great endeavor, labor, khun pasina. And when you lose that, it is very painful. And Prabhupada was getting experience again and again and again. So when he read this verse, it was like Krishna was speaking to him through the page of Bhagavatam directly. That I am showing you, Abhay Charan, Prabhu, my dear devotee, my special favor. Because that helped Prabhupada to really make a solid decision to stay away from his family. Because they were only interested in his, and as long as he was providing, he was welcome. But when he could not provide because of failing business, he was not so much welcome. But Prabhupada is still undaunted. There's a fierce spirit which governs Prabhupada's life. Fierce spirit. How much this man must be having inner strength to face so many difficulties. It's amazing. He had gone to Jhansi for doing business. And there he found some contact. Somebody is interested. There's one gentleman called Mr. Dubey. Mr. Dubey is a, sort of a president of one Gita Mandir. And he invites Prabhupada, come and speak while you are here. This is around 1952 now. Prabhupada is 56 years old. And by now he's a veteran preacher, prolific writer. And he's not just Bhakti Charanaravinda Das, he is now Bhakti Vedanta Abhay Charanaravinda. That Upadhi Bhakti Vedanta came from his senior godbrother Bhakti Sarang Thakur, Bhakti Sarang Maharaj, who, because he wrote this very, very powerful elaboration on Gita, Gita Upanishad, it was so powerful, and it represented exactly the same spirit of preaching, non-compromising attitude of preaching, which is typical of Bhakti Siddhanta. That chopping technique of writing with clarity, with authority, with conviction and faith, that was evident clearly in the introduction of Gita Upanishad. So seeing that, his godbrother said, you are Bhakti Vedanta. You have bhakti. You have Shuddha Bhakti, but it is based on the pure teachings of Vedanta. So he became Bhakti Vedanta Abhay Charanaravinda. So Jhansi is Prabhupada's important part of his life. Uttar Pradesh, Jhansi. He meets a very young, dynamic man, Prabhakar Mishra, 25-year-old man. He's a principal of a, Sanskrit college. Sanskrit Vedanta College principal. And he also is a doctor. involved in, you know, Ayurvedic University. And he meets Prabhupada and they become friends. And there is Dr. Shastri, Dr. Prabhakar, and many other people. And there are 50 young medical students from that college who all come to hear Prabhupada regularly at Jhansi. And his pure elaboration on Krishna conscious philosophy is so attractive to the people of Jhansi, the students become really inspired. And Prabhupada is now, you know, trying to form a base in Jhansi. Prabhupada is willing to form a base anywhere in the world. You see, Prabhupada was so much, he was not attached to any place. He wanted some place to start off and kick off his Krishna movement in all over the world. And any place is all right. He is not saying Bombay or Delhi. You know, like a business, you start a business, you know, you want to start a business in Bombay. You want to start, you know, in some small village in Palghar, you know. He was willing to start from anywhere. He and his friend, one Mr. Mullik, are walking down the road and they see a building next to a big pond. It's called a Radha Smarak. And Prabhupada sees the building and says, this is a nice place for a temple, is it not? It is a vacant place, mango trees, neem trees, nobody is there, it's just lying there. And they find out that actually this building was built by, a few years ago, by a great Vaishnav whose wife's name was Radha. So Radha Smarak. Prabhupada goes to this place and finds a plaque. In Hindi it is written Radha Smarak, English it is called Radha Memorial. And there is a plaque next to it saying, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. When he sees that plaque, he said, this is Krishna's signal. He wants me to start this movement here. Prabhupada was so much looking for Krishna's clues, where he wants his movement to start off from. So I will start here. So he talks, negotiates, and then somehow he gets that place. And then there is another place called Bharati Bhavan he gets also. And now Prabhupada is preaching in Jhansi. He and Prabhakar, they go padayatra, they go walking into the villages of Jhansi, distant villages, 20, 25 miles they walk to all the villages and they preach. Prabhupada does the kirtan, speaks and gives all the villagers their Krishna consciousness. And he's feeling very confident that this is going to be the place where he will start off from. And then he actually writes a prospectus. Because the movement has to be the movement has to be registered there, so he writes a prospectus, which is very very nice. My notes are always Now this is actually what he wrote. Like he said, wanted. You know, sometimes you go on these railway platforms, they write wanted some sales girls, sales boys, wanted this, wanted that, wanted so many wanted like that. So, Prabhupada also released a very important ad in the wanted. But what he wanted, that's important. He didn't want anything for himself. Prabhupada was fully satisfied, Atmaram. Now, this is important for all young boys and girls sitting here in this room to listen. Because Prabhupada's desires, whatever he has desired, will be fulfilled. And is being fulfilled. And we are seeing all this, what is happening in the world today, Prabhupada's desire. So his desires are all powerful. Even though we don't see immediate success in Prabhupada fulfilling his, you know, his mission, but what he wanted, Krishna fulfilled for him. Krishna is obliged to fulfill the desires of his devotees. He's obliged because of that pure love and surrender of his devotees. So what did Prabhupada want? Wanted candidates from any nationality. So Prabhupada is not thinking of Jhansi. Not thinking of India. He's thinking of the whole world. Same thing like Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur. Everyone from all over the world is welcome to Braj Mandal Parikrama. The same mood of always thinking of the world. He was a world acharya, not an acharya of Jhansi or Bombay. He was an acharya of the whole world. He was Jagat Guru. And the whole Jagat was his preaching field. Nothing small. always big, worldwide. Huh? Jiva Goswami, years ago, he started Vishwa Raja Sabha. These acharyas, they never talk of small things. Vishwa. Big. The market is, they have a product. And what is the market? The market is the entire world. So wanted, candidates from any nationality to qualify themselves as real Brahmins for preaching the teachings of Bhagavad Gita for all practical purposes throughout the whole world. Deserving candidates will be provided free boarding and lodging. Apply AC Bhaktivedanta, not Swami, not there anymore, still, he's not become a Swami still. AC Bhaktivedanta, founder and secretary of, now he called his movement here, it wasn't ISKCON then, it was League of Devotees. League of Devotees. Apply League of Devotees, Bharati Bhavan, Jhansi, UP. This is what Prabhupada wants. Please remember, that desire is eternal. He wants all young men and women of all nationalities to join, to become Brahmins. Not Brahmins, all of you know by now, Brahmin doesn't mean wearing a thread. Prabhupada is not talking about some cheap two-paisa Brahmins. Some people who are really qualified in the highest culture of pure living, who are completely trained in the art of Krishna conscious lifestyle, who are completely well versed with the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, who lead exemplary lives, and who are leaders of society. He wanted such type of people. Prabhupada actually has mentioned a figure also. He said, I want 40 people. In one place he's mentioned, I want 40 people like this. Then Prabhupada had that conviction that only 40 people are there, I have an army of 40 people, I can make the whole world Krishna conscious. Of course, Navi has hundreds of such people like them, like him. Then we have this BT and VTA. When you think of this, please remember this BT, you know, Brahmachari Training Ashram. Then you have VTA, Vaishnav Training Academy. Now, this may be all different names, but they are in complete unity of Prabhupada's desire. Prabhupada wanted young people, and at least in our temple we know, other temples also, there are engineers, doctors, lawyers, chartered accountants, various software engineers, all getting trained to live in the temple. And please note, all of you are members, if you are sitting here, that you are the product of Srila Prabhupada's pure desire. It is Prabhupada who is inspiring from within your heart the desire to give of yourself completely to a mission. And whether you become a brahmachari or a grihastha is immaterial. But the fact that you are coming to this place to be a BT or a VTA, to dedicate yourself fully, selflessly, to the mission of His Divine Grace, that is desire is coming to your heart, being inspired by Prabhupada. That is Prabhupada's desire. The life of Prabhupada in Jhansi is very instructive, because when we compare his life of what type of life he has asked us to live in ISKCON, it is the same thing. Prabhupada was not just different when he began the movement. His life schedule is given when he was in Jhansi. 4 o'clock, get up. Brahma Murta. 4 to 5, writing. The first thing Prabhupada does when he gets up is not to take a bath. As an old man, taking a bath early in the morning might not be good physically. Maybe that was the reason, I don't know. But anyway, Prabhupada starts writing from 4 to 5. That is his first mission. He was told, if you ever get money, print books. That was his command. So the first thing he gets up in the morning is write for the pleasure of his Guru Maharaj. Then, 5 to 5:30, he goes for a walk. The same thing he did when he was at Los Angeles. So many places where there was a beach, he would always go for a walk. That was Prabhupada's style of doing things. Half an hour, he go for a walk in Jhansi. Everyone is sleeping, but he's going there and walking. Maybe he's thinking. And then 5:30 to 7 o'clock, he chants. Something which we do in ISKCON every day. 5:30 to 7:15, we all chant, is it not? In all our temples, that was a schedule followed by Prabhupada himself when he was in Jhansi. Nothing new. He wasn't giving something new. Then 7 to 8 o'clock, Srimad Bhagavatam class, even in Jhansi. So this schedule that Prabhupada gave us in ISKCON, this schedule was given to Prabhupada by us specifically in the year 1970. Till 1970, the schedule was not there in ISKCON. But in 70, Prabhupada installed that this is the schedule which we have to follow, the morning program, what we call, beginning from Samsara Dava till 9 o'clock Prasadam. That was something which Prabhupada himself did in his life at Jhansi. Anyway, things are not going to be very fine here also in Jhansi, somehow or the other. There's a big advertisement, people come, there is a big program, a lot of people are gathering, and governor comes, and so many things, and there's a nice thing happening here, but again, Krishna has a different desire. This road is called as Kem Munshi Marga, this road which we are situated right now. The same Mr. K. Munshi, Kanal Munshi, was the governor of Jhansi also. And he had a wife whose name was Leelavati. And she was a woman activist. She was so much involved in women's, not woman liberation, but you know, somehow helping women with employment and job opportunities and this and that and like that. So she had, they had two followers, Suryamukhi and Chandramukhi. Two assistants of Mrs. Leelavati. And even though Mrs. Suryamukhi was actually part of the League of Devotees, and they want now to have a center for their women activities in Jhansi. So looking for a place, where can we start our base? So I think, Bharati Bhavan is very nice. But Bharati Bhavan belongs to Prabhupada by now. He has been told by the landlord, the owner there, that, you know, I will gift it to you. Because it's not used, I gift it to you. Suddenly he comes under pressure because this gentleman is having also a cinema house which requires license to be renewed every year. And the governor's wife says, if you do not give us this building, we will snatch away your license. So he's under problem now. So he goes to Prabhupada and says, Bhaktivedanta ji, you will have to pay us 5,000 rupees to buy this building. So you told us you're going to give us, it's a gift. That's the deed. No. 5,000 rupees. At that time of point of time, in the 50s, Prabhupada was most poverty stricken. His business had completely finished. He had no opportunity to even raise 500 rupees for the rent of that place. Poverty stricken Prabhupada. The man who had seen, he had seen money. Prabhupada was not, he had seen lakhs of rupees in the business. But this point of time, he did not have enough opportunity to even raise 500 rupees, or talk of 5,000 rupees. Prabhupada is forced to leave that place for women's activities. But again, it's a very interesting correlation that Prabhupada's fine temple, Sri Sri Radha temple, is very much on the same road, the Kem Munshi Marg. So Prabhupada has made even. I will not get a place, I'll get a place here on your road, and I'll show you. The same Kanal Munshi road, Prabhupada's very important center in the Hare Krishna movement is established very on his very road. And no Leelavati, only Leelas. Only Krishna's Leelas as Radha Gopinath are taking place here. Very nice. Now Prabhupada is on the roads again. He's on the roads. And he has no inclination to go back home. Prabhupada sees at that point of time, you know, he has been communicating a lot with the you know, primary leaders of our country. Mahatma Gandhi, Jawaharlal Nehru, Rajendra Prasad, all of them. And you will find very interesting one letter which Prabhupada wrote to Rajendra Prasad, our first president. As I said, Prabhupada's thing always looking big. And he knew that if the big leaders of society, they were actually become part of his movement, then his movement would get a lot of, you know, impetus. So here is an unknown man who has got no influence, no money, no supporters, no disciples, nothing. Of course, Acharya Prabhakar, that person in Jhansi, became his first disciple. He was Prabhakar Mishra, he became Acharya Prabhakar, that was his initiated name. But, you know, he couldn't give his life fully. Anyway, so here is a completely unknown man in the wilderness of this world. But he is communicating with the president, prime ministers. He was a big, Prabhupada was a big man, small stature, big man. And he wrote a letter to Rajendra Prasad. Now, please hear the letter also very carefully, because this letter reveals the conviction of his heart. If we all take, this letter is not for Rajendra Prasad actually, it's for all of us. It is Prabhupada's Prasad. It's Prabhupada's mercy. What he writes to the president of the country, the biggest man in the country, is president, he writes to him, I have got the clue of going back home, back to Godhead. Just after leaving my present material body. And in order to take along with me all my contemporary men and women of the entire world. Look at this. Prabhupada is telling the biggest authority of the country that I have that magic. I have the clue. I have that particular type of elixir. I have that formula. What does the formula do? This formula, if accepted, will make all men and women of the entire world go back home, back to Godhead. And in line of this particular desire to take the whole world back to Godhead, I'm writing this paper. I had enclosed in the letter a paper, which is the Back to Godhead magazine. And he writes again because he knows that somebody, a materialist, when he reads such a letter, he thinks, what kind of letter is this? I have the clue to take everybody back to Godhead. Who's this guy? What an upstart. And what is he thinking of himself? Prabhupada is aware that what he is saying is apparently so revolutionary. Nobody writes such letters. Nobody thinks like this. People think of, you know, having money and enjoying life. And nobody thinks of going back to Godhead. It's a weird type of desire. But not for devotees. We know this is not a weird desire. This is the actual goal of human life. Not to become comfortable in this world of matter, but to go back to our eternal abode in the spiritual sky with Radha and Krishna and Vaikuntha. That is our actual position, the very purpose of human life. So Prabhupada writes a second paragraph, sort of saying, please don't think of me as something wonderful or as a madman. Very serious. Because material life and spiritual life is so much diagonally opposite to each other, it may appear to a materialist, what is this? It makes no sense to a materialist going back to Godhead. He never considered in his life something like that. But for a devotee, it is a reality. All of us are here waiting for that day, I'm sure, in this life or in some future life, where we all of us can go back to Godhead. Why are we chanting Hare Krishna, come to temples and doing all these things? Because we don't want to stay in this world. It's a miserable world. Krishna has said it very loud and clear. Dukhalaya masashvatam. And we have enough experience of that, is it not? Anybody can say, well, I don't think it's so dukhalaya. You go to a second class compartment on the train and see. You just have to get one experience, you know, in the second class compartment, not even second, first class also. Any train, you know, when it's in at 11 o'clock in the night, or of 3:30 in the morning, how you get completely squashed to death. Can anybody really say, life is great, everything is kem cho saru che? What is saru che? Kasai barai, how are you fine? It's all lies. Nothing is saru, kais baranai. Nothing is proper in this world. Health problems, dengue fever, malaria, cancer, it's all over the place. What's going on well? Backache, toothache, headache, falling hair. So many problems. I mean, everybody is just a bundle of problems, isn't it? Life is just a bundle of trying to unravel these knots of problems in our life, one after another, which are keep coming, cropping up. And where is? So devotees say, this, I'm doing this, all this fine, but ultimately I want to go home. Please remember, what is Prabhupada's conviction? He labeled his very magazine, again, a very illusory magazine. You have Eve's Weekly and you have got, you know, Stardust, whatever you have it. But he's called him the magazine as Back to Godhead. Now what this magazine itself reveals Prabhupada's complete conviction that he is here to take everybody in this world back home, back to Godhead. That is his message. That is his mission. He is not looking for his own salvation. He is already a liberated soul. He is a Mukta Jiva, a Nitya Siddha. He does not get liberated. But he is taking all conditioned souls of this world, not to this world, of this entire universe, back home, back to Godhead. And what is this formula? This is a formula. In 1935, Prabhupada had in Allahabad, Prabhupada made a nice friendship with a very nice gentleman, a doctor, called O.B.L. Kapoor. O.B.L. Kapoor had become a friend of Prabhupada, and just 1 year before, he had taken Diksha from Bhaktisiddhanta, and his name now was Keshav Das. And he was a doctor, and he was a pharmacist. There was also some affinity there. They were talking, exchanging. So Keshav Das Prabhu tells Prabhupada, can you give me that, you know, formula? Actually, he gives him one tonic. Prabhupada gives him one tonic. And he accepts it. And he said, but can you give me that formula which will give me Krishna Prem, which you have? It's a serious conversation. By that time, he did not take it, not taken very seriously by Dr. Kapoor. He said, can you give me that formula which can give me Krishna Prem? Prabhupada said, yes. I have that secret formula. And I will give it to you. And I will give everybody in the world this formula, which will give everybody the highest perfection of life. Purushartha Shiromani. Way beyond dharma or artha or kama or even moksha. At best, any other so-called release movement can give you moksha. But rarely you get a bona fide religious society or a movement or a sampradaya which can offer you Purushartha Shiromani. Krishna Prem. Prabhupada said, I can give it to you. And what is that secret formula? Prabhupada told Dr. Kapoor, Trinadapi Sunichena Taroriva Sahishnuna Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadahari. Shri Prabhupada ki. And how many times have all of us heard this from the lips of Radhanath Swami? This is exactly the acharyas are in line with one another. It is not a disjointed type of activity. Bhaktivinoda Thakur did something and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati did something else and then Prabhupada did on his own way something else. No. There's complete unison of the desires, unison of preaching, same stream of thought, same spirit of compassion, same fearlessness. It's the same thing going down the parampara. We've heard so many times this from the lips of this great Vaishnava. Every lecture, he reminds us that this is the secret formula. Trinadapi sunichena taroriva saishnuna amanina manatena. To be humble like a blade of grass, tolerant like a tree. To offer all respects to all other living beings of this world. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy names of the Lord constantly. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram Hare. So this is the letter which Prabhupada wrote Rajendra Prasad. This is Prabhupada's formula. And we must take it seriously. Anyway, now he's at Delhi with one of his godbrothers living at Chippiwadi near Chandni Chowk. And he keeps on writing, But again, Bhakti Sarang Thakur Maharaj says, we don't have a place for you, sorry, Prabhupada. You must leave our ashram. Again, Prabhupada is on the roads. At last he thinks, I must go to Vrindavan. Krishna's home. I don't have a home in this world. In Vrindavan, Prabhupada is first staying at Bamshi Gopalji temple, overseeing the Jamuna. And then he starts staying in this very important temple, Sri Sri Radha Damodar Mandir. The renunciation spirit of Prabhupada is revealed through one of the very nice poems which he wrote. It's called Vrindavan Bhajan. Here is a man, and his sentiments are being revealed. Generally, when people write poems, it is not just for commercial use, for publications and all. A genuine poet writes to express the deep mood of his own heart. That's, poetry is a form of expression of your soul practically sometimes. And devotees have 26 qualities. One of the qualities is kavi. They are poets. Prabhupada writes in a very pensive mood this nice poem, which reveals his heart of complete detachment from all things of this world. I'm sitting alone in Vrindavan Dham. In this mood, I'm getting many realizations. I have my wife, sons, daughters, grandsons, everything. But I have no money. So they are a fruitless glory. Krishna has shown me the naked form of material nature. By his strength, it has all become tasteless to me today. Yasya aham anugranami harishita dhanam shanai. I gradually take away all the wealth of those upon whom I am merciful. How I was able to understand this mercy of the All Merciful. Everyone has abandoned me, seeing me as penniless. Wife, relatives, friends, brothers, everyone. This is misery, but it gives me a laugh. I sit alone and laugh. In this Maya Samsar, whom do I really love? Where have my loving father and mother gone now? And where are all my elders who are my own folk? Who will give me news of them? Tell me who. All that is left of this family is a list of names. So this aspect of Prabhupada's life is where he is completely lonely. A man who was prospering in wealth, had so many contacts, so much influence, so much of respect, is now all alone in this world. But he is in Vrindavan Dham. On the material platform, he is utterly lonely and useless. But he has his connections. He has his connection with this entire parampara. Now Prabhupada relocates himself at the Radha Modar Mandir. And in that place, Prabhupada finds renewed energy. His spirit to preach has not died down. In fact, it is becoming more strong. From his very room, he can see the beautiful form of Sri Sri Radha and Damodar. And please see the connection. This is the same temple. Jiva Goswami's Aradhya Vigraha is Radha Damodar. In the same temple 500 years ago, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Jiva Goswami and all these empowered acharyas would sit in the same compound and make strategies to preach Krishna consciousness all over the world. It is from the same very place Jiva Goswami had sent those three empowered disciples, Saman Pandit, Narottam Thakur, Srinivas Acharya. In the same place again comes another empowered acharya, His Divine Grace, who by the blessings of Jiva Goswami is going to do the same thing. He is making a strategy to flood the world with the mercy of the six Goswamis. And he is overseeing, out of his very window, the Samadhi Mandir of Rupa Goswami. Please remember, Prabhupada is all alone on the material platform. But in a very nice book called Prabhupada's Friend to All, written by a very nice Vaishnav, he writes of a devotee who was Prabhupada's friend. Prabhupada told his friend years ago, before he went to America, that he would regularly get visitors at Radha Madhavar Mandir. And who are his visitors? Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, and Jiva Goswami. They would, in their spiritual bodies, come and meet Prabhupada. And they give him that intense confidence which a man of this stature needs. With no money, no support, nothing. But they had to give him that confidence that we are with you. You just continue your mission. So on several occasions, Prabhupada has seen the divine forms of these great acharyas. Go talk to them, converse with them, like we are talking to each other right now. And that gave Prabhupada shakti. Prabhupada keeps writing, and he is now planning to go to the West. But he doesn't want to go alone. He needs support of literature. Books are the basis. He wants to give the world the knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam. So he starts writing. He writes the first canto, second canto, the first three volumes of Srimad Bhagavatam emerged at Radha Madhavar Mandir. And he was at Vrindavan, he met one gentleman, Mr. Agrawal, and he was telling everybody, I want to go to America and I want to preach and I want to spread the mission all the world. He told practically countless people by now. And this person meets him for the very first time, Mr. Agrawal, and says, yes, I will help you. But Prabhupada said, no, so many people say, I will help you. Yeah. Good idea. Karna chahiye sab bachcha hai. People talk like that, give you some sort of aswashan. Suddenly finds from the external ministry affairs a letter saying that your sponsorship letter for going to America is ready. Hi. To go to America is ready? Yes. Mr. Agrawal's son, Gopal Agrawal, is an engineer in Pennsylvania and he has sponsored Prabhupada's stay in America. But now Prabhupada wanted passport, visa, P-form, and some money to travel. So he goes to Bombay, he comes to Bombay again and he stayed this time at Andheri. Because the India steamship colony was at Andheri. And Prabhupada walks from Andheri station to that place because to save money from bus fare. And he goes there to beg. Prabhupada is a beggar. Begging for Krishna, not for himself. Prabhupada begs from this very nice lady, Sumati Murarji. She had already given him money to print his second volume of Srimad Bhagavatam. The first volume was donated by Hanuman Prasad Poddar of Gorakhpur Press. Second came through Sumati Murarji. So he went to him and said, give me some money and facility to go because you are running a steamship company, navigation company. I would like to go to America. She says, no. Finally, Gopal is like adamant, I want to go. She succumbs to Prabhupada's intense desire and said, yes, Swamiji, I will help you to go. And on 13th of, anyway, Prabhupada got all his things ready. He's all fired up to go. Everything is ready and at this time, on 13th of August, he will leave, 1965. Prabhupada makes the last important journey now from Bombay to Mayapur, where he needs to get the blessings of his Guru Maharaj. Remember, this was the mandate given to him in 1922. So without his blessings, he cannot go and leave the country just like that. Offers his pranams to the Samadhi Mandir. And then he goes to Calcutta. Nobody was there, all alone. So 13th August is an important day for us because 13th August 1965 is that day when Prabhupada stepped out of the country to preach the message all over the world. And he reached the harbor, Boston Harbor, on 17th of September. Prabhupada has now become 70 years old. His Janmashtami, all of us know after Janmashtami is Prabhupada's birthday. His 70th birthday was unobserved, unceremonious, on the Jaladuta. The big struggle there of Prabhupada in America also, things have not changed. We know the story of how he stayed at Gopal Agrawal's house. Sally Agrawal was there, and that's a sort of more known story. And after a lot of struggle going here and there, he finally reaches from Butler, Pennsylvania to New York. There also he had so much. The struggle of Prabhupada, there seemed to be endless. Krishna really tested him so much. Not so much to really see whether he's determined or not, but to show the world that he was the right man. How much he endured for all of us. Even the heart attacks in Jaludha could not unnerve him. Two heart attacks. He was now on his way. He was waiting for this moment to leave the country and take. He had Srimad Bhagavatam with him. He had Chaitanya Charitamrita with him. He was not going to go one step behind anymore. He was dreaming of going and preaching because he had understood the complete futility of preaching to this country of India. Prabhupada was so upset. He writes in his own words, "I knew this country of India will not respond to my 40 years of efforts because they are completely mesmerized by this evil culture of sense gratification coming from the West, of drugs, gadgets, big clothes, nice cars, a life of complete artificial needs and dunked down in forgetfulness of the Lord." So Prabhupada was going to America, but remember, he was going to America to make the whole world Krishna conscious, yes, but more so to reactivate his own countrymen towards Krishna consciousness. That was his very important agenda, to reactivate the sleeping souls of India. Because he so many times said these words, Bharata Bhumita Hoila Manushya Janmachar. Janma Sarthaka Kari Karpar. He was very much wanting that Indians take it up. How happy must Prabhupada be to see that he has now so many centers in India? Rajkot, Surat, this, that, so many places. How many centers in India flourishing? Must be a happy man. Prabhupada must be so happy. At that time he had not a single, imagine 40 years of preaching and one disciple, they had also not surrendered. 40 years is more than half his life. He couldn't create a dent in people's consciousness in India. So what amount of desperation Prabhupada had to make the whole world Krishna conscious. He knew if the Westerners become, then Indian will follow. Because we like to imitate. Something from there must be good. So then now Prabhupada is living in New York. And things go on and a lot of details are there. But we now come to the point of our Tuesday's celebration. Offering our tribute to Prabhupada for his incorporation of ISKCON. Prabhupada has given the name League of Devotees in Jhansi, but this time he coins the word ISKCON. That word is based on Rupa Goswami's book, Padyavali. There's a word called Krishna Rasa Bhavita. There's one phrase called Krishna Rasa Bhavita in Padyavali. Krishna Rasa Bhavita actually meant the mellow of devotional service to see Krishna. Prabhupada coined the word ISKCON from that phrase of Rupa Goswami. And 1 year has already passed in New York. He's now stationed himself at this shop called Matchless Gift. And he wants to register his movement now. He's reached America. So he makes friends, and there is another for the golden avatar. You need a lawyer for starting a registering movement. So for the golden avatar, for the golden movement, golden era, the lawyer is called Mr. Goldsmith. Mr. Goldsmith comes. Prabhupada makes friends with him and said, so he had, he has some fascination for, Indian movements, Indian religious culture and all that. So he, and Prabhupada was sitting one day in his place, Bachelor's Gift, and there are so many people who have come to hear him, all these half-drunk, drug addicts, derelicts, acid heads, LSD. The rejects of American culture. Even the Americans had rejected these hippies. So they also were like Prabhupada. They had nowhere to go. They had their own homes, their own wives, whatever. Money, cars, everything. They also like, fuck it. Nothing was there. So Prabhupada took the lowest of the low, the most useless bunch of people on the planet living in New York. He picked them up made them into Vaishnavas. Imagine. Golden touch, Midas touch. You touch, a great soul is known by his, he's called a touchstone. Vaishnava is called a touchstone. That means in whomsoever's life he touches, a transformation takes place. And Prabhupada could pick up such people and make them into Vaishnavas. Anyway, one day he's sitting there and he says, so, we are going to register our movement. And it will be called as ISKCON. And he gives the long form of the acronym. So I said, Swamiji, should we not call it International Society for God Consciousness? And that would be probably better, you know. Prabhupada said, no. That is very impersonal. Not very personal. God is a name. God is a person. Again, personalism. Impersonal calamity, Dava has removed. So you don't want to just compromise saying God. God means Krishna. The supreme personality of Godhead. Specific. God has a name. We have a name. Can God not have a name? Hundreds of names. Namana Makari Bhuta Niji Sarva Shakti. He has got so many names. Sahasra Nam. And then to start a movement, you have to have some trustees and like that. You know? So he picks up Mr. Raphael, you can sign. And Mr. Green, come. You can also sign. And Mr. Mike, yeah. And Mr. Goldsmith, you can be also a trustee yourself. You are a lawyer and you can be a trustee. He just picks up people from the audience and says, sign these papers. They don't know what's really happening. I mean, what? You have just one shop called Matchless Gift. It's, I don't know, I have not visited that, but it might be, you know, about 15 by 15 or 20 by 20 room, whatever. And you're now saying, we are going to form the, from this shop, International Society. Really far out, you know. You have got no centers, nothing, you know, International Society. But Prabhupada is convinced. And before this, he had met a person called Mr. Ruben, who was a subway conductor in New York. He's sitting on a bench, Prabhupada was sitting alone. Mr. Ruben comes to him and said, and Prabhupada tells Mr. Ruben, there are hundreds of temples, thousands of devotees, millions of books, they're all there. Only time is separating them. Prabhupada was not a daydreamer. He could see the future. He could see the future. Here is a man who has got no penny in his pocket, not a single follower, not a single temple, no house to stay. He's saying, there are hundreds of temples. You will say, maybe he is little, you know, well, no. Prabhupada had so much conviction in the prophecy. Prithivite achayad nagaradigram. This is his, Prabhupada's conviction. That if Mahaprabhu Chaitanya has said it, it will happen. In every nagar, in every gram, prachar hobe moranam. It is going to happen. Thakur Bhakti Vinod in 1885 had made a prophecy also. Very soon that person will come who will make the whole world Krishna conscious. Very soon that day will come when Russians, French, Englishmen, Germans, Nartaki Mataji is here, Germans will come and assemble where? At Sridham Mayapur. What a far out prophecy. Why would Germans, why would Russians, why would Englishmen come to Mayapur? For what? But this is prophecy. Prophecy is not based on material considerations and logic and rationality. It is divine. Does not have to conform to ordinary mundane logic. But that is a prophecy nonetheless. That they will all come to Mayapur and loudly chant, Jai Sachinandan Gaur Hari. Who was the man who was going to do all this? His loving divine grace, Srila Prabhupada. Yes, Prabhupada said there are hundreds of temples. So now Prabhupada is starting here. And there's a manifesto. There's a lot of pages. And to finish this discussion today, we will now read what is in that manifesto of Prabhupada's ISKCON. What is this movement meant for doing in this world? And we'll also see as we read that even the Prabhupada is left here with nobody, no support, the fledgling small movement in New York City, the desires of Prabhupada as manifested in 66 Day after tomorrow, what he expressed in 1966, that is now, we are 41, this is the 41st anniversary of ISKCON. So what Prabhupada wrote 41 years ago, how all of that has come so very true. Every desire of Prabhupada, Krishna has empowered him to fulfill. So we shall end the discussion today by reading Prabhupada's manifesto for his Hare Krishna movement. The purposes stated within ISKCON's articles of incorporation reveal Bhaktivedanta Swami's thinking. There were 7 points, similar to those given in the prospectus for the League of Devotees he formed in Jhansi, India in 1954. That attempt had been unsuccessful, yet his purpose remained unchanged. 7 purposes of the ISKCON. First, to systematically propagate spiritual knowledge to society at large and to educate all people in the techniques of spiritual life in order to check the imbalance of values in life and to achieve real unity and peace in the world. This movement is going to bring about peace and unity. Prabhupada had seen many wars. Remember, Prabhupada's life has started with wars. He had seen the independence wars. In fact, he was part of the independence movement himself. He had seen independence wars. 44, he saw the Second World War. He saw the famine, the death, the riots. He had experienced that. People were dying in front of his house. World War II, he had seen, heard bombings in Calcutta. Japan was bombing Calcutta at that time. He had seen when he came to America, so the Vietnam War. He had seen so many wars in his life. So he was desperate to give people peace. So this reflects his mood. There will be peace, no more wars. Second purpose, to propagate a consciousness of Krishna as is revealed in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Very clear, not in any other hanky-panky scripture. But based on these two scriptures, Gita and Bhagavat, we are called as Bhagavad Dharma. Sanatana Dharma is Bhagavad Dharma. It has to be based on Gita and Bhagavat. That is the foundation. So that was Prabhupada's basis of the movement. Everything he said, everything he did, everything he preached had to be from authoritative source. And he quoted profusely in his lectures from Gita and Bhagavad. Third purpose, to bring the members of the society together with each other and nearer to Krishna, the prime entity. We say Govindam Adipurusham, the primeval Lord. That is the same thing, the prime entity. Thus, to develop the idea within the members and humanity at large that each soul is a part and parcel of the quality of Godhead, Krishna. Mamaiva Amsha Jivaloka Jivabhuta Sanatana. To make people realize that the real identity is not American, Indian, Hindu, Muslim, man, woman. Our identity is what? We are all Krishna's eternal parts and parcels. This was Prabhupada's conviction that everyone has to come to this spiritual realization of their identity. Fourth manifesto, to teach and encourage the Sankirtan movement, congregational chanting of the holy names of God, as revealed in the teachings of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The technique for realization will be Haririnama, 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 Eva Kevalam. That is Prabhupada's conviction, that the means and the ends are the chanting. So to encourage in this world the Yuga Dharma, not any hocus pocus dharma, but to Yuga Dharma is Kirtanadeva Krishnasya. In Kali Yuga, the holy process is Kirtanadeva Krishnasya. Fifth manifesto, to erect for the members and for society at large a holy place of transcendental pastimes dedicated to the personality of Godhead. Imagine, Prabhupada was going to make dhams. He was not convinced that only Krishna performs his leela in Vrindavan or Mayapur or Ayodhya. He wanted to create such holy places where Krishna performs his leela even today. So in 67 he formed New Jagannath Puri, San Francisco. In 68, he formed New Vrindavan. Vrindavan? New Vrindavan. Huh? It's Prabhupada's desire that Krishna will come here, perform his pastimes. And these seven hills are there in New Vrindavan. On all these hills, there will be Radha Madan Mohan Mandir, Radha Shamsundar Mandir, Radha Raman Mandir. All these mandirs will come. We can see it is happening. Huh? Vrindavan, New Vrindavan, Prabhupada's prime project. New Talavan, New Barsana. Prabhupada had the conviction to make dhams. What a revolutionary idea. Creating dhams. Nobody did that in the past. Nobody even thought like this. And this has come true. It is not just an empty daydreamer's business sitting and, you know, dreaming like that. Prabhupada actually made New Vrindavan happen. Sixth point, to bring the members closer together for the purpose of teaching a simpler and more natural way of life. Simple living, high thinking. That's Prabhupada's motto. He wants all his followers to live a simple life, that is, in their clothing, in their eating, in their thinking, simple life. But this thing of the highest thing, devotional service to Krishna. Last point, with a view towards achieving the aforementioned purposes, these previous purposes, to publish and distribute periodicals, magazines, books, and the writings. That means to publish. That is Prabhupada's instruction, to print and publish books. And all these books we see in the Simhasana of Prabhupada, all of which we have been reading through so many years, the Gita, the Bhagavad, this is Prabhupada's desire. And of course, the periodicals like the Back to God magazine. So we can see how these 7 points of desire of Prabhupada, which he all alone, it was really a one-man army. Truly. It's not just an ethereal concept. It was just a one-man army. He had nobody to support him. But behind him was the power of Radha and Krishna. The power of the entire parampara. They are backing him up. And this way, Prabhupada, we can see all that happened after this movement started in 66 to 77. That is more or less known to all of us. Today we speak about these things so that we can really remember the sacrifice which Prabhupada has done for all of us. And on Tuesday, which is the day after tomorrow, the day when ISKCON took birth officially in this world, we can offer our tributes, our love, our prayers, and our very lives to His divine grace. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.